So we are reading Bamidbar chapter 20. This chapter is straight back into the narrative, or maybe in a certain significant sense, this is where the narrative switches to the third part of the narrative, which is what we call the narrative of the 40th year of the Midbar, narrative of the Bnei Yisrael getting closer to Eretz Yisrael and what happens at that stage. Of course, there's an interesting connection between that and the mitzvah that we've just came from, which is the mitzvah of Pura Adumah, which is to purify from Tumas Mes, because this chapter has a bunch of deaths, at least one. I mean, the chapter has two deaths in it, and actually talks also about the thing that caused Moshe's death, so in some sense has three deaths in it, but of course the chapter is not an organic division of the text. But we do for sure have the death of Miriam right after, and of course the Medrash already noticed this connection, but I think that that's some kind of association. But really we're getting back to the narrative, and the division that I'm making within the narrative is something that we can see, and is also very clear again in Sefer Devarim, when Moshe gives his famous speech in the beginning of it, where he divides it in this way, because we have the kind of the, although there was the narrative of their travel that started in Parshas Balos, where they're traveling to Eretz Yisrael, that narrative sort of finishes in Parshas Shlach, where the Meraglim caused that plan to be abandoned, or to be pushed off for a full generation. Then the Mechlokes of Korach might have happened before that or after that. It's not clear, but definitely doesn't have much to do with the end. Of course, we have this Navirim over there complaining that Moshe is not bringing them to Eretz Yisrael, so it might be a response to what happened with the Meraglim. Or in any case, though, that belongs to that series of events. We can see it as the beginning of the journey in the desert. Now, we're getting to the end of the journey and starting to discuss the actual giving over of the generations. This generation, including its leaders, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, are going to die. And we start getting to the next generation, which is going to Eretz Yisrael. So that's really where it starts. And the location where it starts is this place called Kodesh. Very clearly in Sefer Devarim, we see that Kodesh is where the second part of the story starts. Of course, the Meraglim might have been sent already from there, but then they went back. So in any case, Kodesh is the place where this part of the story starts. So let's just read. There's a few, like I said, this chapter is, we could see some kind of organic hole in it because of what I discussed. It has the stories of Miriam dying, then the story of Memeriva, and then the story of the attempt to go through Eretz Edom, and then also the death of Aharon in the same place, or in Hoda Har, which is around next to Edom, but that's just the chapter division that makes that sound connected. It's, of course, also in one Parsha, and Parshas Chukas, but in general, this is where we're up to. So let's start from the beginning. So they come to a place called Midbar Tzin, and within that, apparently, a city or a oasis, a place called Kodesh. And in the first month, it doesn't give us which year, we are to assume this is in the 40th or the 39th year of the journey of the desert. They come there, and over there, Miriam dies and is buried there. So Miriam's grave, so to speak, is in Kodesh somewhere, wherever that is. So that's one note, and like I said, it's an important note. Miriam was obviously the oldest of the three siblings, Moshe, Aharon, and Miriam. You can see that Miriam was, if she's the sister that watched over Moshe already when he was a baby, she's the oldest of the siblings, so she dies first. And this is, I think, symbolizing how the generation is finishing to die, including its leaders. Of course, everyone died, but we don't talk about the plain people so much. We talk about the leadership. And now, next story, and of course, again, the connection between this story and Miriam's death is something that the Medrash has elaborated on a lot. Apparently, Miriam has something to do with the well. This is a plausible idea, but it's not explicit in the text. It's something, an association that's built out of it. But the story is more reminiscent of the same stories that we've had at the beginning of the Midbar. Also, they're called Meriva sometimes. Maso or Meriva might be a different place, might be the same. There was some Afarshim that understood this is the same story, but it's not necessarily so. It's definitely the same structure. So the physical story might have happened more than once. The desert is obviously a place with no water, and sometimes they somehow survived. They found water somehow all the time, but every time it's a new challenge, but the challenge can repeat itself again and again. So it's not the fact that it repeats itself isn't really a problem. Even the fact that it's the same kind of complaint, the same kind of meriva, the same kind of sign, is also not something that's really a problem, because that's to be expected from the story. If you know the story, you would expect that. So that's not really a problem, but I'm just mentioning that this is a story that belongs to that series of problems, very basic story problem. You go in the desert, one big problem is that there's no water. So that's what happens. They're in Kodesh and there's no water. The Eidah has no water. So they gather to Moshe and Aharon, and we have, they fight. This is the language. I think this language isn't in other places. We have the Eloni al Moshe, Teluna, they complain. And here they fight with Moshe. Vayirifem al Moshe means they literally fight, or they have argument with him. Of course, this language, like I said, is in Beshalach, and the story of the rock and the water is the same language. And what do they say? We wish we would have died with our siblings, with our brothers, in front of Hashem. And where is this Lefnei Hashem? Not clear. What are they talking about? But then they complain. They say, why did you bring Kahal Hashem? So again, we see this thing of Kahal Hashem, beginning from Korach already, how they consider themselves Kahal Hashem. Well, not just Moshe is this one that has connection with Hashem, and we just need him, and therefore we can't complain. No, we're also Kahal Hashem. And Moshe, they blame Moshe to bring Kahal Hashem to the Midbar, where they will die along with their animals. Why did they go? So that's one thing. And the same thing, why did they take us out of Mitzrayim to be us to this bad place, which is not a place of planting, not a place with any any figs, any grapes, any pomegranates, any rima, no water. So there's no trees, there's no water. But where's this Lefnei Hashem where they want to have died? It might mean something like we should have taken our complaint earlier about Korach until the end and then died Lefnei Hashem, like the people that died in Musil, or it says on the Meraglim, Musil Lefnei Hashem, some kind of death by fire or by plague, which is called Lefnei Hashem, and dying on thirst is worse than that. It's like you die just from not having water. Or Lefnei Hashem means they should have died in the desert, in Mitzrayim, like they said in Shefa Shemois, they said we should have died in Mitzrayim, or there's nothing, there's no point in coming to the Midbar. In any case, and Moshe and Aharon act in the similar way as they always act. They come to Pesach al Moed, they fall on their face, and Hashem's glory is revealed to them. And here, other than in other places, Hashem doesn't complain about Moshe. So this is the fascinating story. I can't give theories in this shiur about what is really going on. Actually, I will give a slight theory. But we remember that in the series of complaints in the desert, always the same structure. People complain about Moshe, and Hashem takes over the complaint. He says, you're complaining about me. He listens, he punishes the people. Here, something very different happens. And let's hear what happens. What happens is, not first, Hashem speaks to Moshe, says, take your stick, take your rod, your stick, gather the people together with the Aharon, speak to the rock, speak to the Sela, and he will give you water. You will bring water out from the Sela, and you will give them to drink, them and their animals. And that's what he does. He takes the Matam Lefnei Hashem. So this is a Matam Elohim, the Matam divine stick, something that has some kind of powers. And he brings them together, and he tells them, Shimino Amorim, listen, you rebellious people, Hamina Sela Zen Eslechamed, will we take out water from this rock for you? That's what he says. And this is Moshe rebuking them, which is something we expect. They're complaining. It says you're complaining all the time. Look, we can get water out of the rock. That's basically how it should be read, I think. Or he's saying, like, what do you, maybe he might be saying something similar to what he said, what do you want from me? Should I give you water out of a rock? Yeah, we're in the desert. We're trying to get there to Israel. We're trying to do something, but you are just being rebellious. That's basically what he is saying. But Hashem told him that he's going to do that. So this is why it becomes interesting, right? So this is, in second we'll see. And he raises his hand, he hits the Sela twice, and water comes out, and they all drink. So we solve the problem of water. Now, instead of Hashem complaining about the people or being angry at the people, Hashem is angry at Moshe and Aharon. He says, "Ya an lehemantem bi lagdishani le'evnei," so you do not trust in me to sanctify me in the eyes of the people. In other words, Moshe, I think this is a repetition on the complaint that Hashem has to Moshe and Baloschu, where he says, "Yad Hashem tiktzar." It seems like at this point, Moshe screamed back or returned the complaint of the people to them. They saying, why did you take us to the desert? There's nothing to drink here. And Moshe says, what do you want from me? It's a desert. And Moshe forgot that his job was to say, no problem, a desert. That's not a problem for Hashem. That's a problem for other people. Hashem doesn't have a problem. And of course, it's not that Moshe didn't do that. Of course, he himself went with the stick and brought water from the rock. But he was frustrated with them and he was upset at them for sort of expecting this miracle and being upset that there's no miracle right away. Of course, maybe this was originally the plan. They're going to get water out of Iraq. That's the plan. There's no other plan. There obviously must have been a plan. But Moshe spoke to them in a way which signified that he is somewhat on their side. He's somewhat agreeing with the argument that there's no water in the desert. And what do you want from me? He's using it to say, like, what do you expect? Why are you complaining all the time? Why are you just being rebellious? But it's the tone was that Hashem can't. And that Hashem was upset at Moshe, and he said, you did this, therefore you will have the same fate as them. Remember, they were punished not to come there to Israel. Why? Because of the Meraglim, because they did not have the same kind of trust, because they said, we're not going to be able to. And now Moshe is saying, we can't go in the desert. Although he's saying it to them, in some sense, he is saying that he's not worthy. So he's lost his confidence, he lost his courage, he lost Hashem's confidence in him. Therefore, you will not bring this community to the land which I've given to them. So that's the punishment, and this is why this is really the parsha that predicts Moshe's death, and Moshe being part of this curse of the desert, part of this curse of the generation of the desert, that they're not going to Israel. Moshe also not going because of the story of Meriva. And as the pasuk finalizes and finishes, these are the waters of strife, the waters of fight that the people, Bnei Yisrael, fought with Hashem, Vayikodesh Bam, and God was sanctified in them. In other words, God in the end did bring water, but Moshe didn't participate in this correctly, and therefore Moshe and Aharon died in the desert. So this is the very important parsha, which finally we sort of kills off the main characters, right? It's not that the India die, but telling that they will die. The main characters Moshe and Aharon, and there will be someone else to bring them to Eretz Yisrael. So that's the end of this chapter, and that's why I think this piece is this parsha is where the ground is laid for the generations and the leadership of the generation to change, and not Moshe bringing them to Eretz Yisrael. But Moshe is still the leader at this stage. Moshe is still the leader, and he's still the military leader of the people. He's still bringing them closer to Eretz Yisrael. Now that they're in Kodesh, so if you look in the geography, you'll see that from Kodesh, if you pass through Eretz Edom, right there you get right to Eretz Yisrael. This is very interesting, because right in the beginning of in Parshas B'Shalach already, they could have went through Eretz Pelishtim and they were afraid, so therefore they had to go around through the desert in a different way. And now there's one more detour, sort of. Very interesting. One more detour where they can go through Edom. Moshe and Sefer Devarim has a slightly different version of this story, but this is what he tells us here. So Moshe sends messengers, or we can translate Malachim, I think would be a nice translation, would be ambassadors. It's always an important messenger, like that carries a message from the king. He sends messengers to the king of Edom, saying, this is what your brother Yisrael says. So Edom is considered the brother of Yisrael with Yaakov. So they're literally treating each other as brother, sibling nations. So he's asking him for permission as a brother to let them through. You'll remember, of course, that Esav already asked Yaakov this once in Parshas Vayishlach, and Yaakov refused in a nice way, and this is sort of the repercussions of that. And they tell him, look, you know all the hardships that we've went through. We went down to Mitzrayim. Remember, you didn't go to Mitzrayim, right? You went to Edom. But we went down to Mitzrayim, our parents, and we were there for many days. The Mitzrayim heard us and our parents, right? Because our parents were already in Mitzrayim, were just their descendants. But we've screamed to Hashem, and he's heard our voice. He sent a messenger. So interesting, he sent a messenger. We sending you a messenger, and Hashem sent a messenger and took us out of Mitzrayim. The messenger, obviously, is Moshe himself, but he's speaking in the name of Yisrael, he's not speaking in the name of himself. And here we are in Kodesh, next to your border, and we're asking you, therefore we're asking you, so they're sort of like being Ma'ir de Rachman, they're trying to arouse the compassion of Bnei Adam, of their brother, saying, look, we've struggled so long, finally we're getting close to where we're supposed to get to, let us go through your land. And they promise them, we're not going to go through your fields, your vineyards. In other words, we're not going to take your food. We're not going to ruin, right? When an army passes by a land, the first thing they do is they ruin the countryside. They ruin the food and the vineyards. I think we're not going to do that. We're going to go in Derech HaMelech. We're going to the highway. Derech HaMelech means literally the way of the king. But what this means is like the highway. The king's responsible for like having highways which don't go through fields and that. We're not going to go right or left until we go through. But Edom didn't trust them. And he said, do not pass. I will come across you with a sword, in other words, with military. It doesn't accept this offer for peace. Of course, it's hard to say that he's entirely wrong, because when these people are, as we've mentioned many times, they're traveling as an army. They're not really traveling in peace. And to let an army go through your land is a dangerous thing. It's not simple. They probably meant it seriously, that they're not going to act that way, but not clear what they would give him to make them trust him. And they ask him again. They say Bamsila Nala, which again means something like we'll go in the paved ways. We're not even gonna make a way. We're not even gonna go in Derech HaMelech, maybe we'll go in some paved ways. And they promise something else. They say, if we will drink. So first they said, we're not going to drink your wells. We'll somehow have our own water or something. Now they're promising even better. No, we'll use your wells, but we'll pay you for it. Just, we're not going to do anything. Just let us go through with our feet. In other words, we're not going to bring, what we say, heavy artillery. We're not bringing along any horses, any guns, anything important. We're just walking through. But it didn't help. Adam said, did not go. And he also followed through on his promise. He came out in front of them with a heavy army, with a strong hand, in other words, armed, and they showed very clearly, they backed up their threats with actions and didn't let the Yisrael pass through. And therefore, they couldn't conquer him, they couldn't fight with him. As in says in Sefer Devarim, that Hashem told Moshe not to fight with him. So it's not only they couldn't, it was also Hashem said that Edom belongs to Edom, we should not fight with them. And therefore, they went around the other way. So now, going the other way, they go from Kadesh and around Eretz Edom, they come to a place called Hodehar. And now Hashem speaks to Moshe and Aharon Hodehar and tells them Aharon will die. He says, Yosef Aharon Lamav, Aharon will be gathered to his people, which means to his dead people, right? To his family, he's going to go back parts. So in some sense, when you're born, you're separated from your greater family, which includes the living and the dead. You're dead, you go back where you came from with your family because he's not coming to the land, as we've discussed 5 seconds ago, because Allah Shmaris must be because you've rebelled against my word and memory. So here we see very clearly Aharon is considered Usta Marisa must be. They didn't follow what Hashem said, or they didn't believe in him enough, trust him enough. So Hashem tells Moshe, take Aharon and his son Elazar, take them up to this mountain, take off Aharon's clothing, in other words, the big day kahuna, put them on Elazar. So this is very clearly, as we've seen in Parshas Tetzaveh, and Parshas later in Parshas Nosa, in other places, we saw very clearly that the dressing the kohen in these clothing in the big dekuna is what constitutes, in some sense, his power, his being the kohen. So this is succession. You take it off from Aharon and you give it to Elazar, so he succeeds him, and that's what he does. They go and they takes off Aharon's clothes, puts on Elazar, and basically, everyone sees that Elazar is now the kohen after Aharon. Aharon dies, and they both come down. Moshe come down with Elazar to show that Elazar is now the kohen. And we have the report of the avelis, the crying. They all see that Aharon died. Therefore, they cry for him 30 days. All the Bnei Yisrael, all the people cry for Aharon. This is a report that we've had for Yaakov. We're going to have it for Moshe. When an important leader dies, there's reports of the people crying for him for 30 days, which is the accepted amount. In other places it says Shiva Yamim, right? So that's why we have Shiva and Shloshim with different levels of mourning. But in any case, there's this report of the crying of the mourning for Aharon since he died, and that's the end of this chapter.